Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Anyone remember the classic George Carlin routine about stuff?
That's all your house is? It's a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Now, sometimes you've got to move. You got to get a bigger house. Why? Too much stuff. You've got to move all your stuff. And maybe put some of your stuff in storage. Imagine that. There's a whole industry based on keeping an eye on your stuff.
George Carlin from 1986. And my next guests have a solution to that problem of needing more space for more stuff. Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Fields Milburn are known as the Minimalists. Has nothing to do with Philip Glass, by the way. The childhood friends noticed their good-paying jobs that afforded them big apartments with lots of stuff inside weren't making them happy, so they got rid of all that. Even the jobs and the apartments and the stuff, and made teaching other people how to do the same their new work. And lo and behold, they count 2 million followers and are on a 100-city tour with their latest book, Everything That Remains, a memoir by the Minimalists. And they join us now. Welcome to WNYC, Joshua and Ryan.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Appreciate having us. Yeah.
So you guys, just for, you know, some demographic context here, are both in your early 30s, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. We're both 32.
Had you heard that George Carlin routine from 86?
Yeah. Yeah, yes, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
And where were you living and working when you decided to become minimalists? And how did you both decide this together?
You know, we were both in Ohio. We both have known each other since we were fat little fifth graders, and we've been best friends for a long time. And we both climbed the corporate ladder throughout our 20s. And by age 27, I was sort of living the American dream. I had everything I ever wanted, but it took getting everything I ever wanted to realize that maybe that's not actually what I wanted. It wasn't what was important. I was sort of living that American dream with the six-figure salary, the big house with more bedrooms than inhabitants. And I had all the stuff, as George Carlin pointed out, filling that house in the basement and the three bedrooms. And then two things happened in my life. My mother died and my marriage ended in the same month. And I started looking around at all the stuff that had become my life's focus and all this accumulation. And I realized that I wasn't actually focused on what was important. So I spent about 8 months really simplifying my life, getting the clutter out of the way to try to make room for what was important.
Now, I don't have you apart yet. So are you?
Joshua.
So, Ryan, what's your story?
So very similar to Joshua. Had everything I ever wanted. Like, if you were to tell my 18-year-old self what my 28-year-old self was going to have, I would have been like the most excited 18-year-old. But got everything I ever wanted to, instead of find happiness, found a lot of stress and discontent and just being miserable. And, you know, I noticed this difference in Josh where he was happier. He was kind of just floating through life a little easier. And I was confused, you know, for a couple reasons. He just had those two crazy events happen. And we were both working together, and he had been just as miserable as me. So I kind of went to him. I'm like, hey, what gives, man? Why the heck are you so happy? Did they put you on some antidepressants or something, or what's going on? And he's like, no, I've just been, you know, kind of applying this philosophy of minimalism to my life, and it's really helped me get the clutter out of the way to make room for the things that are really important. And I kind of connected with it right away. I knew he wasn't crazy. I've known him for over 20 years, and I thought maybe if, you know, worked for him, maybe it could work for me as well.
So listeners, anyone out there who has tried the minimalist thing, living by choice simply, excuse me, are you thinking about it and you want some advice from our minimalist guests? If you have tried it and it didn't work, I'm curious what stuff you couldn't live without. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692 for Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Fields Milburn, authors of Everything That Remains, a memoir by the Minimalists. So here's a Facebook post from one of our listeners on this. Malia writes, I've moved several times, and each time I seem to keep less and less. At this point, I think the only reason I have anything more than a few changes of clothes, books, drawing paper and pencils, and dinnerware for just myself is that I'm a mom.
Right.
So this is one of the, you know, the first things that I thought of as a question when I heard you two were coming in and what you're trying to do. As a dad,
sure. Yeah.
How can you be a parent and be a minimalist.
That was actually a really important part of the journey. When I first discovered minimalism, I first found this young entrepreneur. His name was Colin Wright, and he traveled the world, and everything he owned fit into a backpack. And that didn't seem that appealing to me because I didn't want to be a peripatetic writer. But then I saw all of these other people with families, people like Joshua Becker, who has two kids and a wife, and he lives in the suburbs, or Leo Babauta, who lives in the city in San Francisco, and he has six kids. And what I realized, there are all these different flavors of minimalism. See, it's not about deprivation. It's not about getting rid of just the stuff. It's about figuring out what actually adds value to our lives and getting rid of the stuff that doesn't add value to our lives. And it turns out that there are some things, you know, I'm not against consumption. I'm against compulsory consumption, buying things because that's what we're supposed to do. And her comment about packing and moving, I think that really resonates because that's really where Ryan's journey started. He did something called a packing party.
Yeah, so that's where my journey with minimalism began. Josh is showing me these websites. I'm like, yeah, great. I'm a minimalist. Like, now what the heck do I do, you know? So we came up with this crazy idea called a packing party where we literally pretended like I was moving. We packed all my belongings. I had like a 2,000 square foot condo, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, 2 living rooms. I have no idea why a single guy needs two living rooms. So after we had packed everything up, I was unpacking day by day to really see what I was using, to see what was adding value to my life. And at the end of those 3 weeks where I did that experiment, I had 80% of my stuff still sitting in boxes. And that was kind of like my light bulb moment. That was really the beginning of theminimalists.com. It was with that 21-day packing
party story. What surprised you that you didn't need, and what surprised you that was hard to detach yourself from?
Yeah, so a lot of old cell phones that I had, I was surprised that I was holding on to these things, because when I thought about it, I was holding on to it because, you know, at one point they were worth $500. But I'm never going to get that $500 back. It's, you know, a cell phone 1 or 2 years old, it's only worth 30, 40 bucks, maybe, if you're lucky. But I was holding on to those things because I had given it that monetary value of 500 bucks. And that was really hard, not just with cell phones, but electronics in general. There was this sunk cost that I really had to just accept and realize that I'm not going to get the money out of that. And letting go of those things was way more rewarding than letting them sit there in my closet.
Did you keep any electronics? Do you have an iPod? Do you have a phone?
Yeah, definitely. You know, kind of like Josh said, this is not about deprivation. This is not about doing with as little as possible. It's really about having things in your life that add value or bring you joy. And I certainly get value from a cell phone. We run a website, so I have a computer. We're certainly not Luddites, for sure.
Yeah. How about you? Same question.
Same thing. I think the just-in-case items of my life, we hold on. There's 3 dangerous words, just-in-case. We hold on to so many things. I caught myself saying, well, I'll keep this just-in-case. I'll need it someday, and in some hypothetical future. And it turns out that most of the things I was holding on to just-in-case, I wasn't getting any value from, and I was just holding on to them. I had to pay to store them. I had to take care of them. It cluttered up my life. And so I realized that I don't need the things just in case. If I'm not actually using them, I could get rid of them.
Let's take some calls. People are calling in with their own stories or questions for you.
Great.
212-433-WNYC. And Elizabeth in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. So I moved to New York in my 30s with this great job and great apartment, garden apartment, and, you know, just started filling it, you know, beautiful things. But I found myself really bored and just bored of acquiring stuff. And a series of events led me to, you know, giving up my apartment. I moved in with an aunt. I ended up even living in a squat for a year, you know, in the Lower East Side. Very extreme. But I loved it. And then I got married, and it's the creep now. So it's 20 years later, you know, the beautiful place. And beautiful things, but I feel sometimes really oppressed by my stuff. But it's some of it is gorgeous, and I don't even know, you know, how to.
You
begin.
Have a dilemma. Dilemma.
Yeah,
you want
dilemma.
Less stuff.
Like, what do I do? But I do feel like I say sometimes I walk in.
But you really like your stuff.
I like my stuff, but it also feels. I mean, I do really enjoy it. But then I do have things like books, and you know, I used to sew, so I have clothing. I have piles of things.
Yeah.
That I have attachment to, and
So what do you let me get some advice for you from our guest.
Sure.
And it sounds like Elizabeth has a real dilemma. It sounds like she's not a materialist, but she has stuff that she really, really likes and is attached to.
I think her dilemma is very similar to just about everyone in this culture. We're steeped in this culture that we're supposed to have things to make us happy. The thing that I had to do was go around and ask myself, does this thing add value to my life? And I kept asking that over and over and over. And now as a minimalist, everything I own serves a purpose or brings me joy. But I don't think you ever get there. I don't think you own your X number of items and you're done. I think it's constantly asking that question, habitually asking that question, does this add value to my life? Because something that adds value to my life today may not add value tomorrow, so I have to keep moving forward asking that question.
Stephanie in Trumbull, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. What do I do with my kids' stuff?
What do you do with your kids' stuff?
I hate their stuff, particularly the comic books, which have taken over any and all dressers. So now clothes are out of the dressers, and I keep threatening to throw it out, but... You know, it's my kid's stuff.
Some of those might be collectibles. Be careful.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm worried about.
Yes. But who gets the agency here in your world, Ryan? Is it the kid or is it the mom?
Well, here's what I would suggest. And by the way, it's really easy for me to give advice on children when I have none myself.
There you go.
But we had a reader come to one of our events who stood up and she said, you know, I want to tell you what I do with my kids, because we get asked this a lot. She compromises with her kids. They agree on a certain number of items that they're allowed to have. I don't know what that particular number was. I think it'd be different for every household. And basically, they have a one-in-one-out rule. So when, you know, the kid will come to their mom and say, can I have this toy? And if it's appropriate and they can afford it, she'll say, yeah, you can absolutely have that toy or that comic book. What do you want to get rid of? Do you want to replace it with?
I think Tina in Brooklyn is dealing with the same thing, right, Tina?
Yes, I am. We have a rule in my house. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and I've always raised her that nothing comes into our house unless something else goes out.
Oh, boy.
So if we're not prepared to get rid of a shirt, we don't buy another shirt. And it's sort of kept everything at a manageable level, and I find that I get the most pleasure out of throwing things away. And I go through my books frequently, and
or hopefully giving them away, or recycling.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely giving them away. Always giving them away, but not keeping things to add more things. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of this is a conversation about money and our relationship to money.
Yeah,
I think so. We have a really good friend. His name is Joshua Becker. He wrote a book called Clutter Free with Kids, and it's a great resource for parents who are thinking about simplifying their lives. But also, what I would say is I noticed that when parents spend half the money and twice the time on their kids, that equation tends to lead to a more meaningful relationship between parent and child.
But I see that in your worldview, the anti-clutter freaks, the people who are very efficient and organized with their space, might as well be in the same category as the hoarders, because it's not about clutter for you.
Yeah,
right?
I was a very well-organized hoarder. I was organized, and that was the problem, because I had an ordinal system of bins and alphabetized CDs and DVDs and VHS tapes. I know many of us still have VHS tapes. And I realized that a lot of the stuff, I was hiding the problem under the guise of organizing it. And I realized that when you actually remove the stuff from your life, find someone else who can get value from the stuff, you're organizing by default without just hiding the clutter.
And we will have to leave it there. I've been speaking with Ryan Nicodermus and Joshua Fields Milburn about their work as the Minimalists and their book, Everything That Remains, a memoir by the Minimalists. I invite you to come back in 15 years when you have two 10-year-olds in the house.
Yeah, we'll definitely be writing
love
about
that.
It.
And talk about the sequel. Do you have a Twitter handle? Is that where all your followers are?
Yes, we're at the Minimalists.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.